this is the only one. As you said, it is a very large area. Why do you want to know that? Oh, she'd broken the rule. She could see it on the ruler's face and in Alexis's slight movement. Answer only the questions she asks. Which meant, she asks the questions, you don't. But she would not apologize. My reasons are none of your concern, girl. Are there any other ways? Lucas and I have gone no further than Clearwater. She had trodden many paths, some with Lucas, some alone save for Flip, but she had always turned back in time to be home by nightfall. As I told you, the people of Hartwood do not venture far into the forest. Her heart began to race. Her hands clenched themselves into fists. She made herself breathe in a pattern, in two, three, four, and pause, out, two, three, four. Let this be over soon. But you walk in the forest often, do you not? I believe you have something of an affinity with creatures, perhaps even wild creatures. Stasia could not help glancing at Alexis. He looked down at his linked hands, avoiding her eye. I live quite near the forest's edge. I do sometimes feed the birds or set food out for small wild things. That was no lie. It was the merest sliver of the truth, but she would not tell more. You seem reluctant to speak of this. Master Alexis, remind this young woman what happened on the day you reached Hartwood. The horse? Alexis looked up. Soon after we reached the village and before we unloaded the carts, there was a mishap with the distressed horse still in harness. It all happened very quickly. The cart was half off the track and a man was trapped underneath. The horse would not let anyone near. Stasia gentled the animal, showing no fear as she came close enough to touch. It turned out that a wasp had flown up the horse's nostril and was trapped there. Stasia kept the creature calm, and after a time the wasp flew free. Under her direction, others helped the horse to safety, and the trapped man was rescued. A pause. I learned later that the local folk know Stasia to be a person with exceptional skills in such situations. They say she can calm the most agitated of animals, where even a farmer of many years' experience cannot. There was a longer silence then. Let this be over soon, Stasia thought. Alexis had said the ruler already knew about the horse. Why make him tell the story again? Could she actually think Stasia would have forgotten such a thing? Reaching the wasp, feeling its panic, helping it to freedom had been a challenge, yes, but also full of wonder. Lady Elisabetta toyed with the papers on her little table. She turned one of her rings around and around on her finger. Such a skill, she mused, not looking at either of the others. Might be useful, might it not? If one were passing across territory inhabited by wild animals such as bears and wolves, a person with this skill would be invaluable to a group wishing to do so. On the other hand, folk might look at the demonstration of such an unusual ability and label it dark magic. Suddenly her gaze was back on Stasia, or even witchcraft. The woman was using threats now. A pox on this. The most frightening thing about what she'd just said was how close it came to the truth. How did the ruler know this about her? What exactly had Alexis told her? Stasia cleared her throat. There is no magic in what I do. It is just a matter of staying calm and trusting the animal and taking time. What could she say about wild animals? She lacked the ability to lie. But she would not tell Lady Elisabetta about the time when she helped a wolf with a thorn in its foot, or the time when she tended to an owl with a broken claw, or the bear. She could not mention the bear. She would not even tell the tale of the magpie hanging from the fence. As for helping people to go through the forest, I would not do that if their venture would lead to its destruction. if their presence there was a threat to the trees or to the animals and birds, I would refuse to guide them. The commander came to Hartwood under your orders, my lady. He laid waste to the forest edge. He cast a shadow on the settlement and its people. He destroyed lives and livelihoods. Stasia, Alexis's quiet voice, his hand on her arm. She was standing. She'd been almost shouting. She'd forgotten herself. But she would not say sorry. She glared across the chamber at the ruler. I could never help anyone who had any part in that, she said. How very unfortunate, said Lady Elisabetta. Just how much help you might have to offer is still unclear to me. I should perhaps remind you that you and your companions have been escorted all the way here. You have been provided with excellent accommodation in Dragon's Keep, and your young man is receiving attention for his injuries. I have even tolerated the presence of your dog. You complain about what has occurred in your home settlement. You are all too ready to blame others for that. While it seems to me the failure of the local folk to cooperate most definitely contributed to the situation. Coming here has served you well. You need not fend for yourself any longer. This household is supplying all your needs and those of your friends, for now. And all I ask in return is civil answers to my questions. Imagine if this woman knew the true extent of her gift. Imagine if she applied the same thinking to that. Stasia wished she had not lost her temper, but she could not regret her words of truth. What had happened in Hartwood was an abomination. She would never, ever be a willing part of any expedition the ruler or her underlings wanted. They had no respect for the ancient forest. They had no understanding of its importance. It was time to stop talking, lest she say something in anger that would later prove perilous. I can't answer any more questions. I doubt you realize the implications of such a statement. You are obviously capable of speaking. Perhaps you do not mean, I can't, but rather, I won't. Stasia held her silence. It was Alexis who spoke, rising to his feet. By your leave, my lady, Stasia is still weary from the long journey and the events that preceded it. She is not used to the customs and formalities of court, nor to living amongst so many folk. As I said earlier, this needs more time. The ruler fixed him with a gaze as cold and sharp as an icicle. I reiterate, there is no time. I need answers. The girl will speak. Not today, perhaps. She raised her hand as Alexis made to interrupt. But very soon indeed. This cannot wait. I will speak with Stasia further, he said. As it happens, you will not. There was an odd look in Lady Elisabetta's eye, as if she were readying herself for a challenge. A message came in earlier from Bishop Petrus. Some kind of unrest has broken out at Raven's Watch, and he has requested your assistance. He does not want armed men, only expert advice. I cannot trust anyone else to deal with it. You'll need to ride out today, as soon as you can be ready. Take Mattis with you, and another guard for security. Alexis simply stared at her. It seemed some conversation was happening between them in complete silence. Then he gave a curt bow. My lady? Stanislav? The ruler looked at the black-clad man. Have the other guard escort the girl back to her quarters. And to Stasia. Young woman, apply your mind to your situation. Next time I speak to you, I expect common sense. You will be ready with answers. By answers, the ruler meant answers that suit me. She was playing a cruel game, and Stasia would take no more part in it. My lady, she forced herself to say. Her bow was less than courteous. With Stanislav by her side, ushering her out, there was no chance to speak to Alexis again, and he left without so much as a glance. Pavel walked her back to the servants' quarters, choosing a route that did not take them through the garden. He was about to leave when Stasia halted him. "Thank you for looking after Flip." "Pavel, how long would it take to ride to Raven's Watch?"
"Ah, you heard about that. With good horses, a day there, a day back, at least. And however long it takes to deal with the matter, of course. They won't get there by nightfall, so they'll likely be gone for several days, even if all goes well."
"Oh." As she watched him walk away, Stasia's mind filled with questions of her own. Was the ruler sending Alexis off on this mission so she could interrogate Stasia in his absence? Surely not. Whether or not she talked further could hardly be of so much importance in this world of power and strategy. Besides, wasn't Alexis the ruler's trusted personal advisor? Maybe the two of them were playing a game, and she would be thrown from one to the other like a child's ball until she gave in. But what would be the point of telling them anything more? Yes, she could lead folk along paths they would not find for themselves. She could use her gift to help people stay safe, but she would never help them get to the hermit, even supposing she could actually reach that far-off mysterious place. Such a quest could mean nothing good for the forest or for its inhabitants. She would not break her solemn vow to keep Hartwood safe, forever and always, Stasia, Grandmother had said, through the generations. It was odd. At times, Alexis had seemed almost friendly, though not like Mattis. At the farm she had felt safe with Mattis. But Alexis had some understanding of her. It showed in the way he spoke of her to others. He knew she was worried about Lucas and about Irina. And those good, honest people at the farm had treated him like an old friend. That should mean something. On the other hand, Alexis had reached a high position in the ruler's court when he was still young. Perhaps he was the real master of this game. Stasia shivered. She might not trust the man, but she wished he wasn't leaving and taking matters with him. She must keep her head down, obey rules, do her best to be invisible. With luck, the ruler would soon lose interest in her. And then she did not really know what might come next. Make a plan? She had no idea where to start. "You could escape," she whispered to Flip, showing her a mind picture. The dog becoming a bird and flying out from one of those narrow windows into a blue sky. "You can if you want. I won't stop you. You could fly all the way to Hartwood." Home. Her longing for it was an ache deep inside her. But the commander and his men were still in the settlement. Who knew what would have become of it, and of the forest nearby, since Alexis had uprooted her and brought her to Dragon's Keep? "If I could be a bird, I would go." She showed Flip the image, a brambling flying over the forest, and with it a skylark singing a joyful song. Flip responded with her own version of this picture, the brambling soaring gracefully, the lark flapping about as if unsure what its wings were for. The message was clear. "You wouldn't know how to be a bird." Stasia smiled at the joke, but her heart was far from glad. Lucas. That was the first step. She must find Lucas. 16. Lucas. He was a sad shadow of his old self, hardly able to hold a cup steady in his hand. Stasia was somewhere out there, in this grand house full of strangers, and he couldn't do a thing to help her. Twice a day, his keepers would get him out of bed and let him shuffle down the hallway and back. Not on his own. The journey to court, on top of what had happened at Hartwood, meant his legs could barely hold him, and he needed to lean on one of the men to walk even that small distance. There'd been talk of a physician earlier on, but no such person had appeared, and Lucas had not asked. He had a pallet, he had a roof over his head. He got two meals a day. Mostly those meals were a kind of gruel,
which compared poorly with the fare back home on the farm, but at least it was keeping him alive. He didn't ask to see Stasia. If she'd been allowed to visit him, she'd have done so. That was the way things were with the two of them. He missed her. He missed the stories that gave him heart in sad times and made him laugh at the end of a difficult day and helped make sense of things. He worried about her. She would hate being shut up in this place with no sight of the open sky. But the men who took turns tending to him were lowly members of the ruler's household, servants who cleaned out privies and scrubbed floors and scoured cooking pans. They would know nothing of where she was or what had become of her. Perhaps she'd been housed somewhere better, in a place where she could go outside when she chose. Perhaps Irina was coming out of her shell now, and the two of them were making friends within the household. A man could hope. He'd become used to the pattern of days here. The visits of his keepers, the changing of dressings, the grey meals, the awkward exercise, the long, lonely nights, and the troubling dreams in which his family still suffered under the commander's cruel control. Then one night, everything changed. He was woken abruptly by someone ripping off his blanket and hauling him out of bed, someone with an iron grip and a harsh voice. "Move, fellow!" There were two of them, guards, men he did not recognize. "What? Shut your mouth and walk!" "But where?" It was cold. He was in a borrowed nightshirt, a garment almost falling apart with age, and his feet were bare. His head was fuzzy with sleep. A dream, a bad dream. "Ruler's orders!" They were more or less dragging him along the hallway now, one on either side. This was real. Lamps burned here and there. He could hear faint sounds of the household stirring. It must be nearly morning. "You're being moved." Lucas did not ask where. He needed all the strength he could find to keep walking, not to sag between the guards like a sack of flour. Stasia would say, "Hold on to hope." She would tell a story about someone who seemed powerless and ended up being a hero. He gritted his teeth, thought of warriors, quests and dragons, and forced himself on. Perhaps they would let him see her now. Perhaps this was the first step toward going home, standing up to the commander, saving his family. Perhaps. It felt like a long way. There were stone steps. His knees ached and his breath was short. For a bit they were outside. He judged it to be close to daybreak, but the sky was heavy with cloud. Briefly he breathed fresh air. The cold hurt his chest. Then inside again, a different building with more guards and sounds of sounds he did not want to identify, for they reminded him of the bad time in Hartwood and the wretched place where the commander had kept his prisoners. His guards came to a halt. Lucas made himself stand upright, despite the pain. "I was strong before. I will be strong again." In stories, sometimes the weak became heroes. Another guard opened a door for them. "Down the end," he said. As they went through, the disturbing noises grew and grew and became the voices of men. Men taunting him. Men rattling things against iron bars and shouting mad nonsense. Men weeping, screaming, shouting to be let out. Please, please! Their wives and children needed them. Worst, as he looked into the cage-like spaces on either side of the walkway were the men hunched down in corners, their arms wrapped around themselves, saying nothing at all. Down the end was an empty cell, barely big enough to contain one man. His captors pushed him in, threw his blanket after him, clanged the door shut and bolted it. "Sweet dreams, fellow," said one, and they were gone. "Welcome to hell," a voice called from the cell opposite. "What did you do?"
17. Alexis. The ride to Raven's Watch had never seemed so slow. It was just as well he had the others with him, or he would have been tempted to push his horse too hard just to get the thing over and done with. He'd managed to speak with Pavel before they left, asking him to keep an eye on the situation with Stasia, but Pavel did not hold much authority at Dragon's Keep.
It would have been better to leave Mattis at court. But the ruler had made it clear Mattis was to go with him, and right now it was especially important not to anger the ruler. As a second guard, he'd taken Carolus, who had some knowledge of the warrior monks, having once briefly considered joining their order, a fact that was not known to Bishop Petrus and would not be shared with him. And Carolus had a particular advantage, exceptional skills in hand-to-hand combat. When visiting the headquarters of the Church of the Godly, it was wise to take companions who were good fighters. Since they were on the ruler's business, the way could be eased by the showing of credentials. Alexis had his silver pendant engraved with the Dragon of the Northlands, marking him out as a member of Lady Elizabeta's inner circle. All three men wore overtunics with the same dragon embroidered on the breast. The robe Alexis wore for official court duties was in his pack, carefully folded. Mattis and Carolus bore arms openly, as befitted their role as his protectors. Alexis kept his own weapons concealed. They spent the first night at an inn where Alexis was known. The horses were ready for a rubdown, a good feed and a rest in well-kept stables. The next day's ride took them along a river valley and across a lake on a sturdily built ferry that could accommodate horses and other livestock. After recent rain, the day was fine and the air fresh and sweet. Alexis found himself thinking how much Stasia would enjoy the beauty of the shining water, with blue sky and scudding clouds reflected there, and the majesty of the wooded hills in the distance. Birds were flying above the boat, perhaps looking for fish, and for a brief time he felt peace in his heart. That feeling dissipated when Raven's watch came into view on the far shore. He could never associate that place with peace, not since his earliest encounters with Bishop Petrus and his warrior monks. Lord Casimir had been a peacemaker. Under his rule, the Northlands had not been involved in any major conflict, whether internally between landowners or town leaders, or on a grander scale with the rulers of neighbouring territories. As for disputes based on faith, belief or superstition, Casimir had balanced taking a firm hand with a readiness to negotiate, to discuss, and to find solutions that kept everyone relatively calm, if not always delighted. The Northlands had prospered during those years. His death had been a great loss. That he had left only a single heir had been worse than unfortunate. Elizabeta had never lived at Dragon's Keep prior to becoming ruler. It had been suggested, once it became clear that she would be her uncle's sole heir, that she might spend time at court in preparation. There was talk of an appropriate marriage for her, the thinking being to form an alliance with a neighbouring territory, but her visits to court had been brief and infrequent. She'd had a tutor at home and had perhaps believed that education was sufficient. As for a marriage, neither she nor her family had expressed any interest in that idea. After Casimir's passing, it had fallen to Alexis not only to advise the new ruler, but to remedy any potentially disastrous gaps in her preparation for the role. At first they'd done well together. Elizabeta had been eager to learn and unafraid of hard work. She had seemed keen to do the job well. But as time passed, it was as if something were distracting her, making her swift to anger and often impatient. She was apt to dismiss his suggestions if they did not suit her, and some of her decisions had been troubling. Dragon's Keep itself had changed under her leadership. She dealt severely with those who angered her, was quick to order punishment for even minor offences against the law, and allowed certain individuals among the guards remarkable authority when it came to dealing with offenders. He wondered sometimes whether she lacked understanding of what her decisions might mean for the lives of such folk, or whether she simply wished such unsavoury matters to be dealt with out of her sight. He feared she might take the same approach to her dealings with highborn and powerful, such as Bishop Petrus, and the leaders of their neighbouring territories. Alexis was senior advisor, yes, but as ruler, Elizabeta would always have the final word. His unease had grown with every passing day. As they crossed the lake and Raven's watch came closer, Alexis found himself glad that Lady Elisabetta and Bishop Petrus did not meet in person more often. The Church of the Godly frowned upon the idea of women in positions of authority. A woman as ruler would be viewed as a disaster, almost an abomination. But the laws of the Northlands must be respected, in public at least, so Petrus had attended the ceremony at which the new ruler was confirmed in her role. He'd been accompanied by a sizable complement of warrior monks, clad in full uniform and armed to the teeth. Their presence had been something of a challenge for the ruler's own guards, and indeed for the whole household at Dragon's Keep. Petrus had congratulated Lady Elisabetta, as all the other distinguished guests had done, not once saying what was in more than one mind on that momentous occasion. If only... But there had been something in the bishop's manner, a certain note in his voice, that had set Alexis's nerves jangling with unease. Mattis had felt the same thing. The man and his all-too-expert fighting squad would need to be watched. Alexis himself was not a man of faith. Under Casimir, many different spiritual paths had existed side by side in the Northlands, with disagreements sometimes played out in heated debate, but never developing into conflict. Bishop Petrus was different. He had ambitions. The Church of the Godly had not originated in the Northlands, but in a nation of seafarers far to the south. Warrior monks with their leaders had brought the faith first to the Southlands, establishing the new beliefs and practices by force where they deemed it necessary. They had obtained land, and the towers and forts they built were testament to the support provided by the nobly born and the wealthy. They had recruited new members with promises of a life of action and excitement as a warrior of the faith. Young men had flocked to join, dazzled by the fine uniforms and the demonstrations of martial skill. Inevitably, the new faith had come next to the Northlands, where Casimir, then a young ruler, had already put in place various controls on all formally recognised religions. That had proved to be one of his wisest acts, and the leaders of neighbouring territories had congratulated him, in Petra's absence, for far-thinking. "Nearly there," observed Mattis, coming up to the rail beside Alexis to gaze ahead toward the fortress that housed Petrus's establishment. "I can think of places I'd sooner visit." Alexis regarded the somewhat forbidding form of Raven's Watch, a high-walled establishment built of dark stone. It housed a place of worship and a training ground for warriors, as well as stables, kennels, and accommodation for a significant number of men. Bishop Petrus had his own private quarters within. There was a settlement of sorts outside the fortress wall. Alexis had wondered whether, in time of siege, the bishop would allow those who lived there, including women and children, entry into the fortress, which was otherwise exclusively a domain of men. The deity followed by the Church of the Godly was known as the One and Only God. His rules could not be described as egalitarian, and they were strict. "Let's hope we can get this business done quickly, whatever it is. There was scant detail in the message I was shown. I'm not sure why Petrus asked for me. He hasn't always welcomed my advice in the past." Mattis lowered his voice, though the nearest crew member was not close enough to hear. "He knows you have the ruler's trust. They're closer to the border here. Could be some kind of pressure from Vidric, of the Birchlands, or even from our neighbour in the east. On the other hand, he may have done this purely to distract her, set her off balance before the council. You might be given some kind of vague, unsettling news. Who knows? Keep your ears open. There'll be training of one kind or another. It never stops here. You and Carolus can show interest. Get involved, maybe. That's the way to pick up what's on folks' minds." Mattis grimaced. "Get involved? Get ourselves killed, you mean? Or at the very least sent home with broken limbs or dented skulls. Aren't we here to keep you safe?" "Broken limbs? You?" said Alexis with a grin. "Never." And if I were a wagering man, I'd put silver on Carolus to beat any of theirs. With the ride home still ahead, I intend to keep out of trouble. But I'll be cheering from the sidelines and talking to whoever wants to engage. Ah, looks like we're about to disembark, and I see there's a welcoming party. The monks were in full ceremonial dress. The outfit managed to suggest both a military uniform and a habit suited to members of a monastic order. The cloth was dyed an eye-catching kingfisher blue. There were touches of gold thread here and there, and a broad leather belt for weaponry. Overall, each man wore a hooded cape. Each carried over his shoulder an unsheathed sword. It may have been a welcoming party, but the monks' faces all wore the same expression, somber, verging on hostile. Their height, too, was startlingly uniform. Perhaps that was a requirement in such a group. The aim, Alexis thought, was less greeting than intimidation. One man stepped out in front and performed a well-practiced manoeuvre with his sword, whirling it around expertly, then lowering its point to the ground and placing both hands on the hilt. As a gesture of welcome, it was somewhat startling. Alexis made sure he spoke first. "I bring the respectful greetings of Lady Elisabetta, ruler of the Northlands, to His Excellency, Bishop Petrus. I believe His Excellency is expecting us. I am Alexis, son of Felix, senior advisor to the ruler. With me come these two court guards as escort." He indicated his pendant of office, which hung outside his tunic. "We would be grateful if our horses could be given a place in your fine stables. They are weary from the journey." He was tempted to add, "Nice day, isn't it?" But kept the thought to himself. "Master Alexis." The guard, whom Alexis recognized from an earlier visit, favored him with a nod. That was good. One never knew in this place whether one might need to whip out a weapon instead of a greeting. "Follow me." "Master Alexis, welcome." Bishop Petrus's tone was courteous, but his curious pale eyes were cold and his face its customary expressionless mask. "Thank you, Excellency. I bring the ruler's respectful greetings, and I hope you are in good health." They'd been conveyed by one of the brethren to a reception chamber, where the bishop appeared to be in the middle of a solitary meal. A half-consumed platter of roast beef and vegetables was on the table, and a flask of what looked like mead stood nearby. "Brother Parvo, Master Alexis will dine here with me. Show his men to the guest quarters." Without so much as a "Yes, Excellency," the monk who had accompanied them ushered Mattis and Carolus back out and closed the door. Alexis found himself glad that he still had his concealed weapons, though it would have been good to wash, change and rest before embarking on what might be an awkward discussion. "May I sit down?" he asked. "Of course, Master Alexis. Food and drink will be brought for you, and your men will dine with the brethren downstairs." Petrus paused, scrutinizing his guest. "You needed protection on the journey, of course. Those two look well up to the job. But you won't want them dogging your footsteps during your stay with us. This place is full of trained fighters, and, of course, we are under the protection of the one and only God. Your men, I am sure, would welcome the opportunity to join the brethren in worship and in their practice of combat skills. The daily drills are quite something to watch." It was hard to find an acceptable answer to this. It would be a waste of energy to debate it. He did not let the bishop see how uneasy he was. Any fool could tell there were some tightly strung individuals among the monks, men who would snap at the least hint of insult or slight, men with the skill to bring a weapon almost instantly to hand and use it to lethal effect, but without the judgment to know when it was appropriate to do so. He'd prepared both his men for this. All the same, he would prefer that they be close at hand, for both their safety and his own. "Thank you, Excellency. I am eager to learn why you requested my presence here. Perhaps after our meal, At this point, a polite knock at the door announced two monks bearing platters of food, knives and spoons, another flask and a cup, all of which they set out on the table before leaving without a word.
"Eat, drink," Petra said, with what might have been a smile.
"Serious discussions can wait until tomorrow. You've had a long ride. You'll welcome a hot bath, I'm sure, and a comfortable bed, as will your men. Enjoy your meal, Master Alexis, and perhaps some of this excellent pear wine, which is brewed on our own premises."
The man was hardly going to poison him.
"Thank you, Excellency. I see the wisdom in not tackling whatever the issue is today, but I am rather limited in the time I can stay here. My presence is required back at court within a few days. This must not be allowed to drag out, and he'd better find some way to keep either Mattis or Carolus close whenever possible." He helped himself to food, and at Petrus's gesture, poured his own wine, then topped up the bishop's drink.
"Your good health," he said, raising his cup.
"And yours, Master Alexis. Are both your men strong fighters?"
That was unexpected.
"They are trained court guards, well trained. We must set up some bouts for them. Give them a chance to show their skills. The brethren would enjoy that. We don't have a lot of visitors here."
Alexis said nothing. He'd talk to the others later, warned them that that man was full of tricks. He concentrated on eating. The beef was exceptionally good, though it was impossible to relax and enjoy it, and equally hard to make light conversation with Petrus when all his instincts were urging him to get the business out of the way as quickly as he could.
"You seem a little tense, Master Alexis," the bishop observed. "Something on your mind?"
"I'm weary from the long ride. Nothing a good night's sleep won't fix. I'll have one of the brethren show you around in the morning. I know this is not your first visit to Raven's Watch, but we've done considerable building work since you last honoured us with your presence."
Alexis was certain he heard a note of ridicule in the bishop's voice. He maintained a politely interested expression.
"An extension to the chapel with new windows, and we've added an area for mounted combat. A library, too, has been improved. You'll hardly recognise it."
"Indeed." There were questions he could have asked, related to how they funded this work, and why any of it was really necessary.
"It sounds as if you've been very busy, Excellency. About tomorrow, might you and I have a discussion after this tour concerning the pressing matter you mentioned in your message to the ruler? I see no reason to delay further, unless you are waiting for others to be in attendance."
Petrus swallowed a mouthful of wine.
"Others? Oh, no. This is a matter to be discussed strictly in private, Master Alexis. Between you and me. Behind closed doors. With two of my men on guard. I may be otherwise occupied tomorrow afternoon, perhaps the following day."
Alexis suppressed a sigh of frustration. "Might you give me a general idea of what it relates to? I was under the impression that the matter was of extreme urgency."
"Best we leave it until you're fully recovered from your journey. For now, enjoy the meal. Make use of our bathing facilities and allow yourself a good night's sleep.
Tomorrow is another day, Master Alexis. You are not under the rule of thumb here at Raven's Watch."
"Got an invitation to a bout already," Carolus announced, as the three of them settled in the capacious guest quarters some time later. They'd been given two adjoining chambers, one with benches, a table, and a hearth complete with firewood, the other with comfortable beds. "Day after tomorrow, against Brother Calyu, who's more Mattis's size than mine. Unarmed combat, which is something of a relief. Weapons can turn things rather bloody unless someone's applying strict rules of engagement."
"You've agreed to it.
It seemed the appropriate response. The brethren might have taken offence if I'd refused."
"What about you, Mattis? No invitations as yet? I would prefer not to have to ride home with either of you at less than full strength."
"No bouts for me. There is a tug of war at some point, I think tomorrow, and I'll be on one of the teams for that.
I'll do my best not to strain anything. We should aim to keep one or the other of us close to you at all times, Alex. We're here to protect you, but that's going to be a challenge, and it doesn't help that folk keep telling us it's unnecessary.
Alexis felt his mouth twist in a grimace.
Because the place is teeming with trained fighters and the one and only God is watching over us all. Funny, that. I don't trust either of those parties to keep me safe, even for a moment. Not that I would express such a view outside the four walls of these remarkably accommodating quarters. The place is so well set out. I keep wondering if it's a trap.
Mattis laughed. We already checked for hidden entries and exits, concealed passageways, trapdoors and the like. Found nothing.
I'm inclined to think the man really does want to talk to you, if only so you'll take word back to the ruler that his establishment is more comfortable than Dragon's Keep, with better food.
He's delaying, and I don't know why. Not a hint yet of what it's all about.
I don't want to be here too long. You know the reasons for that.
Petrus implied that our discussion may not even be tomorrow. Guided tour in the morning, and he's busy with other things in the afternoon. A game in which only His Excellency knows the rules.
Alexis realized both men were regarding him with amused expressions.
What?
That game, my friend, said Carolus, smiling, is the kind at which you are an absolute master. Though you have let us in on some of the rules, it's true, and just as well.
You don't want to find yourself alone with this, Alex.
It's a risk I'm prepared to take, if it comes to that.
Alexis lowered his voice to a murmur.
Best not talk about it here, even if you have checked the place for secret listening spots. But keep your ears open for any kind of talk that might be relevant. Gather what information you can without arousing suspicion. We want to know whether Petrus has travelled to talk to other leaders recently, and whether his attitude to the new ruler has changed in any way. Continuing to show tolerance because he has no choice. More hostile than before. We know his capability in the event of any kind of armed conflict breaking out. This is his main establishment, but there are several others across the Northlands, each with its contingent of warriors. If it came to a confrontation, which way would he go?
Carolus spoke in an undertone.
His own, would be my guess. A knock rendered them all instantly silent.
Mattis opened the door to admit a small procession of monks carrying a bathtub, ewers of hot and cold water, and such useful items as soap, brushes, and cloths for drying. When the bath had been set before the hearth and filled, Alexis thanked the brother who seemed to be in charge.
When you're finished bathing, Master Alexis, the monk said, please ask one of your men to step out into the hallway and signal to the brother on night watch. He'll be at the top of the stairs and we'll arrange for these things to be collected.
A pause.
Of course, we also have a communal bathhouse next to our own quarters. Your men would be welcome to use that whenever they wish.
There was an unspoken message behind the polite words. Whether it was, this has all been rather a nuisance, or guards don't get the same privileges as royal advisers, was unclear.
Once the door was closed, Mattis said, I suppose communal bathing would be a good way to pick up useful gossip. Do monks gossip?
When I last spent time in an establishment like this, said Carolus, the communal facilities had only cold water. The fellows would conduct a drill, or a mock battle, or a series of exercises, then plunge in. Except, of course, in the depth of winter when the water iced right up. There was some spiritual worth attached to that bracing experience. Today I'll gladly share the royal advisor's bath water. You go first, Alex. Just don't stay in until it goes cold.
18. Alexis. The chapel was indeed beautiful. The roof arching high, the windows admitting light through intricate patterns in coloured glass. Alexis could not see where the original parts of the building ended and the new parts began. Surely such work must have been carried out by the most expert craftsmen, perhaps brought in from beyond the borders of the Northlands. The bishop's coffers must be vast indeed. Whether this was the best use for those funds was questionable, lovely as the result was. He'd managed to conceal his reluctance to attend a religious service. He knew how Petrus worked. If he decided for reasons of his own that their discussion must wait, a demand for an earlier meeting would only irritate the man. Alexis could have approached one of the more helpful monks and made a polite request. Instead, he decided to let the day flow as it might, rather than cause a stir. Tomorrow would be a different matter. If Petrus did not take steps to discuss whatever the mysterious concern was, he would apply some pressure, reminding the bishop that they needed to return promptly to Dragon's Keep. He feared Elisabetta would subject Stasia to further interrogation, this time without his own moderating presence. Bullying would either send Stasia into a shut-down silence, or worse, cause her to shout defiant words as she had to rehard that night in Hartwood. There was only one step from that to Elisabetta calling in certain individuals who would obey even the most unsavoury of orders. She'd done so a number of times before, generally when Alexis was absent from court. The results were always unpleasant and sometimes dire, though the ruler herself seemed to turn a blind eye to that, and none of the other advisers were prepared to speak out, since that would be to risk her disapproval and perhaps lose a well-paid position. As for Alexis himself, he could tell Elisabetta was becoming tired of what she saw as his interference, and that made him fear not only for folk like Stasia who got in her way, but for the very future of the Northlands. He needed to be back at court. The service was impressive. His brethren loved spectacle. The monks sang a wordless hymn to their god, the melody rising and falling in evocative peaks and troughs, while a long procession of senior brethren made its way toward the place where a statue of the one and only god stood, gazing out across the gathered men. No sign of Petrus. And no folk from the community present. This was for the monks only. And it seemed for official guests, though the three of them had been seated on a bench at the rear of the chapel, not among the brethren. The carven god, his wooden form painted in the same bright hues as the garments worn by the faithful, looked down on them, not with the benign expression of a deity who loves and cares for his flock, but with a face that seemed to Alexis somewhat detached. It was as if this god's mind was on other things entirely, such as the nice cup of pear wine he would enjoy when the service was finally over. Indeed, if the one and only god resembled anyone at all, it was Bishop Petrus himself, and Alexis wondered if the sculptor had done that on purpose. There were prayers and more prayers. Some, it seemed, require the faithful to lie flat on the floor face down while murmuring or muttering the words. Alexis and his companions exchanged a glance the first time all those in front of them dropped abruptly from kneeling to lying prone. None of the three followed suit. Later the brethren rose to kneel again, and one monk with an exceptionally fine singing voice rendered a chant that was a genuine pleasure to hear. Alexis detected a second voice, that of Carolus, who was humming along very quietly. Then came a hush of expectation, and certain men rose from the ranks to walk, with heads bowed to the feet of the statue. Alexis started in surprise when a bell rang out just behind him. He forced himself not to look over his shoulder. Once the men reached the carven god, the bell was quiet, save for a single ringing tone which seemed to signal that one man should fall to his knees. It was hard to see clearly. Alexis suppressed the urge to stand up for a better view. An older monk, perhaps senior in the order, rose to his feet about 10 paces from the kneeling man. "How have you offended, brother?" he inquired in somewhat accusatory tones. "I have offended the one and only God by conversing with a woman, father." A sound, somewhere between a gasp and a murmur, rose from the congregation. When the senior monk turned to look at them, silence fell.
How could such a thing come to pass, brother? Any novice of this order learns from the earliest days that discourse with females is strictly forbidden, save under exceptional circumstances. Were the circumstances exceptional? You speak at the very feet of our God. Tell nothing but the truth.
I was in the settlement, father, collecting a load of firewood with the cart. A child ran across the road ahead of me. I only just managed to halt the horse in time. The child was frightened, screaming. The mother was distraught. I got down from the cart, offering her my apologies, made sure she and the boy were unharmed before I moved on. We exchanged no more than a few words. A pause. It would have been discourteous simply to drive on without some acknowledgement, father.
The silence that followed was ominous. Mattis twisted his hands together, plainly disturbed. Alexis imagined how Stasia would act if she were to witness this. He thought of her storming forward to deliver a fiery speech about compassion and common sense, or to tell a story that made the same point.
How long have you graced us with your presence at Raven's Watch, brother?
2 years, father. The voice was unsteady now.
2 years? And you think to instruct me in the interpretation of the God's law? You will remain in the chapel overnight, under watch. You will remain kneeling during that time. No falling asleep. If you do, another night will be added to your penalty. Do you understand?
Yes, father.
Do not transgress again, or you'll face a far more severe punishment. Next.
The bell rang again. Another man fell to his knees, told of how he had been exhausted and hungry after a long day's battle drills, and had eaten not only his own ration of soup and bread, but also that of a fellow brother. This meal had been left unattended on a bench, and he had thought nobody wanted it. The penalty? 3 days without food. And so it continued, until all of the offenders were accounted for. Each summoned by the doleful bell, each confessing with eyes downcast to breaching some rule, each given a penalty that seemed quite out of proportion with the offence, the whole thing was deeply disturbing. As the three of them left the chapel, Mattis's hands were clenched into fists. Alexis struggled to maintain the impassive face of a royal adviser. Carolus seemed the least troubled. Perhaps he had known what to expect.
"Picked up some information earlier," Mattis said, as another evening came. He was reclining in the bath, to the extent that was possible for a man of his height. They'd given him first turn this time, in view of his contribution to the winning tug-of-war team. There'd been 10 men on each end of the very sturdy rope. Mattis had been what was known as the anchor man for his team, the one at the far end, and in the absence of the bishop, who had not made an appearance all day, the brethren had been almost as noisy in their appreciation as any crowd of well-muscled locals celebrating a victory at a village fair. Might be useful, might not.
Tell me.
They were keeping their voices down, even in the privacy of their quarters. The bishop's often away for a night, a couple of nights. Takes the same monk as escort every time. Nobody knows where they go.
I could speculate, Carolus murmured,
but in view of the penalty for associating with a female, even for the most innocent of interchanges, I doubt I'm right.
Family?
Mattis rose from the tub, creating a minor flood on the slate floor tiles, and accepted the towel that Alexis held out.
Parents deceased, Alexis said. No siblings that I know of. They used to live in the south, near Oak Valley.
Mattis raised his brows but said nothing.
I wouldn't trouble yourself, Mattis. He's unlikely to be going so far, even supposing he still has connections in the area. Perhaps after we get back to court, it may be worth investigation. Anything else?
Only that some of the monks aren't so bad, Carolus said. Get them away from the rules and restrictions for a bit and they can be quite friendly. Though that might only mean they're trying to worm out our secrets, I suppose.
One or two of the younger ones clearly have doubts about what they've signed up to here, but once they're in, it's pretty much impossible to get out. And they do enjoy the combat practice, the drills and so on. Might be different when it's real and you're watching your comrades hurt or dying, not to speak of killing people yourself. Perhaps that's one reason the rules are so strict here. No hints of when some kind of real combat might have last happened? Alexis asked. A carefully guarded secret, as you'd expect. I did visit the stables to check on our horses. Amazing place. Grand in scale. Had a chat to one of the workers about the best way to get horses ready for an extended trip. He spoke about the roads to the north, up as far as the border. I didn't ask too many questions, just let him talk. I believe the Order has a fairly new house there. Established before the current ruler's time, but newish, yes, Alexis said. Carolus, feel free to get in the bath. The sooner we all wash off the grime of the day, the sooner we can sleep. In the morning, if I don't get called to speak to Petrus, I'll request a meeting. Maybe I'll suggest firmly, but politely, that if he doesn't talk to me, I'll consider heading home anyway. I'd like to leave by midday if the ferryman can accommodate that. Another night at the inn, then straight to Dragon's Keep. You're really worried. Carolus had stripped off and was in the bath. Soap suds almost concealed the bright auburn of his hair and beard. Close your eyes, said Mattis, dipping a large cup in the water, then pouring the contents over his comrade's head. And one more. Alex, what do you think she's going to do in your absence? Perhaps nothing, but I have a bad feeling. Why send us here with such urgency if the matter in question doesn't require a meeting even on our second day? I think we've been got out of the way for some reason. I hope I'm wrong. They packed the next morning as if for departure. Mattis went down to the jetty to speak to the ferryman and ensure that, if they needed it, he would take them and their horses across the lake sometime close to midday. As Carolus was preparing for his bout with the monastery's unarmed combat champion, Brother Parvo came to fetch Alexis. The bishop was ready for a meeting. In the reception chamber where they had met before, Petrus was enjoying a flask of wine. Master Alexis, will you join me? He waved a hand towards the second cup on the tray. Thank you. No. I'm pleased to have the opportunity to talk with you at last. I understand the matter is of some urgency. Perhaps. It is hard to tell. Word has reached my ears that there may be a challenge to the ruler's authority at the next Grand Council. A challenge? From what quarter? The North. Vidric of the Birchlands. Odd, you might say, that such a man would act thus toward a neighbour, but... Petrus paused for effect. It was as if he were telling a story, and Alexis wondered how much of this was in fact truth, and how much the prelude to some different and more genuine matter. Along with most of his people, Vidric adhered to the very old faith based on gods and goddesses of earth and sky, fire and water. The people of the Birchlands were peaceable. Their festivals of faith were joyful events with music and dancing. For such a leader to threaten the authority and security of the Northlands would be odd indeed. But, prompted Alexis, thinking fast, he should not dismiss this out of hand. If such a threat were real, it would surely not emanate from Vidric, but from another source entirely, one that was not difficult to guess. Alexis waited for the answer he was almost sure would come. You look surprised, Master Alexis. You can imagine, I think, that the impetus for such a challenge comes from beyond Vidric's borders. A power far larger and stronger than that of the Birchlands is behind this. You speak of the Grasslands. I do. You are aware that our order maintains a number of houses spread across both the Northlands and Southlands, some almost as substantial as Raven's Watch. We continue to build. The numbers of our faithful constantly increase. It has long been of concern to me that we have not established a footing in the Birchlands, thanks to the superstitious nonsense Vidric encourages among his people.
Petra's voice dropped to a murmur, though it was surely not possible for the guards outside the door to hear their conversation. You may be aware that our most northerly establishment lies on the bank of the River Dekla, which marks the border between the Northlands and the Birchlands. Vidrick did not welcome our building activities there. A substantial settlement lies on his side of the river, directly opposite the site of our house, but he could take no action. The land on which we built was the ruler's to bestow. What better place for the Church of the Godly to fly its banners than there, overlooking that realm of primitive earth worshippers? So our men built and settled and spread the word of the one and only God. Alexis waited. There must be a but coming. The Dekla provides fine fishing. The catch helps sustain the residents of our house there, and also Vidrick's people who live on the other shore. Both our brethren and those village folk take small boats out in season, and there is also some fishing from the banks here and there. The one and only God ensures his faithful of sustenance. The river also sustains those who do not believe in this deity, Alexis thought. This leader of men believed only what it suited him to believe. Where was the bishop going with this? Among our brethren in that house are some adventurous souls. When conditions are favourable, they take a larger craft some distance downriver. Once or twice they have put in at landing places on the other side and engaged with local folk. The bounties of the Dekla do encourage settlement close by the water. Indeed, we have at least one Birchlands man among our brethren, which has proved useful. He can guide us in understanding their speech. The tongue, you understand, is not the same as ours, though not so very different. Alexis restrained himself from tapping a foot in frustration. Engaged with local folk, he echoed. Engaged in what way? Talked. Discussed matters. Our men spoke of the faith and the opportunities it offers. There were some disagreements. Occasionally it came to blows. Nothing worthwhile is won without a fight. Ah, now at last the man was getting to the point. What were your men hoping to win, Excellency? Hearts? New recruits? A better share of the fishing? Or perhaps a new place to build? Alexis managed to keep his tone to one of polite interest. We are constantly in search of fresh opportunities, Master Alexis. Petrus cleared his throat. I had word that our brethren in their travels down the Dekla had experienced some odd occurrences, interference with their nets, folk observing them from concealed positions on the banks. My brethren are skilled in detecting such activity, and one attempt to halt their progress when they came close to a certain fortified settlement on the Birchland side. Also whispers from some of the local people, suggesting spies from the grasslands may already have a presence in that region. I'm aware that the ruler can be somewhat determined in her course forward. I have often wondered how you manage to do your job, Master Alexis, when the lady has a tendency to make her choices without heeding the wise advice folk of greater experience can offer. Should those rumours be true, she cannot afford to ignore them. You and I know, Master Alexis, how perilous an armed advance from that quarter would be, so close to our own border. And we know Vidrick is neither equipped nor inclined to stand against such an advance. I see. Alexis's mind was working quickly. Important not to say the wrong thing here, or he would antagonize the bishop. If true, this was indeed a matter that should be drawn to Elisabetta's attention, but he suspected the account was exaggerated, at the very least. What did Petrus really want from him? Have you raised this with Vidrick or his advisers? Ha! The sound was contemptuous. I'd only be given a lecture on interfering in other folk's business, I fear. Vidrick is the kind of leader who sees everyone as a friend. That is, until the